Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Goeiedag en baie welkom by die program Markplek Ambassadeurs, die program van CBMC Suid-Afrika hier op Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. En baie welkom, dis my voorreg Harm Engelbrecht, om weer vandag te gesels met 'n gas in ons ateljee. En dit is dieselfde gas met wie ons laasweek gesels het, en dit is die interessante man wat via Zimbabwe en Johannesburg en Australië in Kaapstad beland het. Welcome, yeah, it's a long journey, but you are here, welcome.
Thank you, Harm, it's a blessing to be here.
Malcolm, ons het verlede week so bietjie begin gesels oor jou agtergrond, waar jy vanaf kom, jou grootword jare daar in Zimbabwe. Maar ons het nie gekom by die dinge waarmee jy nou tans besig is nie. En jy sien ook jou rol as ambassadeur vir Christus daar waar jy jou werk elke dag doen. Just to let the listeners know that Malcolm is English.
Yes,
I'm not sure if you understood what I asked him now.
Yeah, so I apologize, I don't speak the heavenly language. Yeah.
So Malcolm, just quickly, you told us last time that you are involved in third sector insight.
Yep.
Well, third sector, first of all, sounds a bit like, almost like the third, what do they call these derde mag? But tell us, what is a third sector all about? And before we go further.
Excellent. Great question, Adam. And again, thanks for the privilege of being here. Yeah, third sector insights. There's the main economy, and then there's a sort of second economy, and then the third sector is that sector where an organization is set up predominantly for a public benefit. So it's not to make a profit, although it's a misnomer that non-profit organizations can make a profit. We just don't call it profit. We call it reserves, and it must be used for the mandate of why the organization was established. So about
in other words, a non-profit is not supposed to pay out dividends to its owner, to directors or to shareholders. Anyway, to board members.
Correct.
Yeah.
So any additional reserves that are made, let's say that you have a program where you generate your own revenue, that must be used for the main objective of why the organization was established. But, you know, this journey started, goodness me, back in 95, 96 when I was involved in management consulting, became very disillusioned, as we mentioned last time, moved out of that and was headhunted through the CSIR to set up a non-profit trust and 9 Section 21 companies. Now, that was the old structure of the non-profit company in South Africa. So this paradigm shift for me coming out of business information provision into management consulting into this thing called socioeconomic development. And that's when my journey and passion began, and that's when God put in my heart a real vision and a picture of the fact that there's a huge gap in equipping governing bodies and executives of nonprofits. In South Africa, we mentioned last time, we have over 249,000 nonprofit organizations. Each of those have a governing body. So what I started to realize was I had to go find 108 board members. I had to, set up these boards. And I thought, well, Institute of Directors would be the place to go. Back then it wasn't. I mean, they've really engaged in the space now. But the picture that God was giving me was that all of us that volunteer on these boards do it from an altruistic or from a passion of the issue that the organization's dealing with. We don't get remunerated for it. And so the journey began. So I've been doing that for just over 20 years. Third Sector Insights, which is our trust, we celebrated our 10th anniversary last year. We've worked with probably over 300 nonprofit organizations, and we've helped equip over 4,000 governing body members. But the real issue is exactly that, is that I did a survey a while ago. There were two core questions. One was, if you were asked to sit on the board of a nonprofit, would you be prepared to? If you answered yes, then answer question two. So 87% of the respondents answered yes to that first question. They would be prepared to sit on a nonprofit. So I said, if you answered yes, then answer question two. Question two was, do you feel equipped to sit on the board of a nonprofit? And over 90% of the respondents indicated no. So it just reinforced the fact that most of us who sit on these boards, because we have a passion for what the organization does, we have no idea about our roles and responsibilities and our particularly fiduciary responsibilities. But what God put in my heart was the second slide that I put up on every presentation I do is when King Solomon was asking the ultimate benefactor for something, what did he ask for? He didn't ask for five-year business development strategies and monitoring and evaluation systems. He asked for wisdom and knowledge. So what's become more and more apparent to me is as we go down, you know, the statutes are there, the legislation is there, the codes of good practice are there. And in fact, we tend to beat ourselves up in South Africa. Our Companies Act is a phenomenal act. And the King Code of Good Practice is a really good platinum standard globally. We have the Inutella Independent Code. So we actually have some phenomenal information available. The challenge that 90% of us who sit on these boards is we have day jobs. So we're either meeting on weekends or we're meeting on evenings at board meetings, and we don't understand the roles and responsibilities. So the third sector is that area where we engage as the trust. We're a nonprofit trust. We don't get donations. We generate our own revenue. So that's what's known as a 101(c)(n) SARS. But what I have found is as we've engaged with the governing bodies that it's all biblically based. That, you know, we always open the workshops by saying, because you're on the board of a nonprofit, we should be holding ourselves to a higher standard. And that standard, particularly if on a faith-based board, is God-driven. And all of the values that we should bring into the boardroom are actually biblically based. So when we run our workshops, both in the secular and in faith-based organizations, we come at it from that perspective in equipping the governing body members to be more effective for social impact. Yeah.
Malcolm, that is a mouthful. You mentioned a lot of things, I try to remember some of it. But I want to ask you quickly a few things around what you said. Surely there are some misconceptions about being on a board of a nonprofit. Some people can go there for their own benefit, and they think they can make something out of it or swindle some money out of the business. Yeah. That's the first thing. And the second one is that people don't really understand the role that they need to play on this board.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys are doing. You are equipping. And what do you do in a case where you sit with a bunch of non-believers in a secular nonprofit? Mm. Because not all nonprofits are Christian-based.
Yeah.
It can be someone that sets up a shelter, but they are not even believers. They just do it to do the good.
Yeah.
So let's start from the first one. Share with us some misconceptions that people have about nonprofits and nonprofit boards.
Okay. Excellent point and very valid. When we engage, particularly with those types of organizations that aren't faith based, what the approach is to say, look, it's all ethics. So when you get to ethics, that actually cuts through whether you're Christian or not Christian. If you are Christian, then there's a higher value base that we need to bring to the table. But most people who start these nonprofits who have a passion for the issue, as you mentioned, let's say they open a shelter. But most of the founders of these organizations may never have actually been involved in a corporate environment or understand policies and procedures and funding strategy and set of chart of accounts. They just want to address the social issue. Now, many times what happens, dependent on the type of organization and dependent on the composition of your board. So one of the critical things is getting your succession planning right, making sure that you have a skills matrix. So when you're looking for new board members, you know exactly what type of skills you're looking for. But I have had the privilege of chairing some organizations on the one side and a bigger privilege to hand them over at the end of my tenure where they're not Christian-based. So you have individual board members who come to a board meeting with personal agendas. They're not addressing the issues that are on the table for the best interest of the organization they represent. So it tends to happen unless you have a very strong chairperson who knows how to deal with those scenarios. Those board meetings can devolve into really, literally, I've had one where I had to stop a couple of the board members climbing over the boardroom table to actually, give each other a course correction. Not a pleasant environment, but it's because they don't have the value base that we would have from a Christian perspective. So it's to put in place the fact that we have policies, procedures, we have conflict of interest policies and ways to deal with it, because that's going to happen in that type of environment. Not that it doesn't happen in a Christian organization, but it's just the way that we address it. We come at it from a different perspective. So come back directly to your question. when you look at getting people onto your board, it mustn't just be that they've got a passion for what you do. They should be able to add value at a governance level, because it's a very different thing. It's not about getting involved in the operations. It's about forward thinking. It's about strategic thinking. It's about bringing your sphere of knowledge and influence to the table and then collectively addressing it. So when you've got a strong chairperson who may have a good value base, they might not necessarily be Christian, you'll find that that ethos will flow through that board, and they will be able to manage it. So it's a tough one. I can sit, you know, having been in the space for a few years now, if I sit in a board meeting, I can see very quickly what the value base and what the corporate culture is within that organization and the decision making that takes place. So you need to have things in place to protect the organization and the individuals, called approval frameworks, delegations of authority, all those kinds of things. Yeah.
Malcolm, the equipping of board members, not for-profit, not-for-profit, doesn't really matter, as well as the role of these people. What is your approach? Let me ask you this. Does your approach differ from if you work with Christians or when you work with non-Christians? Is it the same? Because the same ethics and the same things will still apply.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not. When you sit on the board, you must be the guy that must take the lead.
Exactly. So you're quite right. It doesn't change. The only difference would be that if I'm doing it for a faith-based organization, I will bring a lot more scripture into the slides and my engagement with them, because there's a very different value base that's coming into play there. But either way, 80 to 90% of your governance is generic, whether or not you're a for-profit or not-for-profit, and whether you're a Christian or non-Christian organization, or any other denomination for that matter. This is about acting in the interest of the stakeholders who aren't at that boardroom table. So your decisions must be made on behalf of the stakeholders, but ultimately the beneficiaries that you're privileged to serve. One of the biggest challenges I find, particularly in this space, is many CEOs come to me and say, Malcolm, we're battling to get board members. And even when we get them, they don't come to meetings. And then even when they come to meetings, they don't come prepared. Now, many times that's because you might not have had what's called onboarding or a board orientation workshop. You need to equip your board members. One of the biggest problems I find in this space, not unique to the nonprofit, is that because we think someone's accepted a position onto our board, they know what they're doing. My experience in 20 years is 80 to 90% of us, including myself, may never have sat on a board before. So we have what we think is our role and responsibility in our minds. Unless you clarify that up front, which is part of the reduction of risk profile for the organization and for the individual board member, you're going to find a challenge in decision-making going forward. I've sat in on many board meetings where the board finishes up and say, wasn't that a fantastic board meeting? We gave our CEO another 150 things to do. And I'm saying, well, no, one of two things is going to happen. What of the things that your CEO is meant to do, mustn't they do? He must do all of these, or she must do all these other 150. And I'm saying, but they've only got enough capacity and resource and funding to do A, B, C, D. You now want them to do all of this. So the other side of that is either you bring them additional funds or you bring them additional resource. So the board's role, yes, is to have oversight and hold your CEO accountable, but it's also to hold ourselves accountable and make sure that we've fully equipped the person who's tasked with running this organization with the resources they need to run it. Now, that's a misconception by many board members. They think their role is to hold the CEO's feet to the candle when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'm saying that's part of it. But how can you ask your CEO at a board meeting if they've achieved what they said they would do when we met 3 months ago, if you haven't made sure they're fully equipped, fully resourced, fully funded? Now, that's an ongoing conversation. So whether that's in a for-profit or not-for-profit, it's exactly the same. The difference is that if you sit on a public listed company, for example, you're getting remunerated to sit on that board. So you're mitigating some of your risk by being on that board, but you're bringing value. In a non-profit, you've got exactly the same fiduciary responsibility and liability, particularly if you're on a non-profit company's board, and we have four different types of NPOs in South Africa, as to if you were sitting on a public listed board. Yeah.
Malcolm, it sounds to me like when you start working with boards and you explain to them what their role is, that some of them may back out and say, listen, it's not for me.
Yeah.
I rather don't do this.
Yeah.
Because it is a responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's also a commitment. It makes me think of the passage in Scripture where Jesus called his disciples. And and they followed him, but at some stage he spoke to the masses and some of them just walked away. Yep. They said, it's too much. We can't do this. What do you do in such a case? Are you trying to beg this guy to stay or equipping him? Or do you just start looking for new ones?
A great point. Well, that's where I come back to your succession planning and your skills matrix. And if you haven't equipped your board member, you can't have an expectation they're going to discharge their duties on your board. So it's a bit of a catch-22 in that space. The challenge in the sector is that most funders and donors don't fund board development. They will tell you the money must go directly to the project, but they expect that you've got a board, that you've got a fully functioning board, that your board knows what they're doing, but they won't put any funding into that. There is a shift globally towards that. That'll come back again to your relationship between your board chair and your CEO. So if you've got a couple of board members that have come on board who might not necessarily be discharging their duties, you need to drill a bit deeper. Is it because they don't understand their roles and responsibilities, or is it they just being obstructionist? And that's a good board chair would pick that up. Now, board evaluations need to be done. And many people saying, but it's a non-profit, we're doing it for good. And I said, no, I understand that. But you're releasing funds to this organization, and this board has oversight of those funds through to the organization, through to the operations, and ultimately to the beneficiaries. We should be doing board evaluations to see whether or not the board members have actually performed. I'll share with you, as you know, I'm on the board of World Vision. We have two internal board evaluations per annum, and we have one external. And if you haven't met the criteria by which you were appointed to the board, you will sensitively be asked to leave the board. It's not personal. If you're not discharging your duties, if you're not coming to meetings, if you're not coming prepared, you're taking a seat away from someone who could be at your table, who could add value to your organization.
Malcolm, we've got about 2 minutes to go.
Okay.
The question I want to ask is, do you see in your line of business that at a not-for-profit board that people will appoint easily less capable people than they would appoint on a for-profit board? Yeah. In other words, that they will kind of making it office, it's not that serious. I mean, anyone that's willing will come and do it because you do it actually voluntarily.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of the challenge we have in the sector. Many people just say, well, look, you know, you should just be happy I'm on your board from the one side. The other side, is that is a challenge. And that's why our focus through Third Sector Insights is about equipping these board members, because that helps them make decisions ultimately on behalf of the beneficiaries, because that's why we do what we do. You can have a higher expectation that if you're paying someone on a public listed company that they're actually going to perform and they're prepared to take the risk. Some organizations, by the way, do remunerate, but it's not called remuneration. It's called a sitting fee. But it changes the dynamic radically at your board level. Yeah.
Malcolm, this all makes me think about that verse in Colossians 3, verse 23, that says that whatever we do, do it of heart as if for the Lord and not for people.
Absolutely.
So ons moenie dinge doen vir mense nie, ons moet doen vir die Here, of jy nou dien op 'n raad van direkteure van 'n groot uitvoerende van 'n groot maatskappy, miskien wat gelys is op 'n aandelebeurs, en of jy dien op die raad van 'n kerkraad, of jy dien op die raad van die skool, of jy dien op 'n raad van 'n nie-winsgewende organisasie. Die feit bly, jy is geroep tot daai rol. Jy het 'n verantwoordelikheid om ook daar as Christus se ambassadeur op te tree en tot die beste van jou vermoë in excellence, in uitmuntendheid, nog steeds jou werk te doen en dit goed te doen. Want dit is nie te sê as jy dit nie vir geld doen dat jy dit moet afskeep nie. En ek dink dit is wat Malcolm vandag vir ons sê, is dat hulle rus die ouens toe om dit reg te doen, om dit perfek te doen, na die beste van hulle vermoë te doen en in verantwoordelikheid op te tree tot die voordeel van die persone wat gedien word deur die organisasie op wie se raad jy dien. Malcolm, dit was lekker om jou in die ateljee te hê. Dit is 'n voorreg om met jou te gesels en bietjie uit van jou kennis te gebruik. Is regtig lekker om met iemand te gesels wat weet waarvan hy praat. So wat 'n voorreg en baie dankie vir jou tyd en as mense wil kontak maak miskien met Malcolm Boyd en die Third Sector Insights, kontak ons gerus by CBMC en ons sal dit aanstuur na hom toe. Stuur vir ons 'n e-pos na admin@cbmc.co.za en gaan loer gerus ook op ons webwerf www.co.za waarmee ons besig is. Malcolm, do you have a website you want to share with the listeners?
Yes, please. Thanks, Haram. It's www.thirdsector.co.za. Thirdsector.co.za.
En daar het julle dit. Ons groet julle tot volgende week. Totsiens.
Dankie, Haram.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.